Hey, Song Surfers, it's your friend John. Welcome to another edition of Song Surfing with Friends. If you're checking out the show for the first time, the usual format works like this. I, along with the show's correspondents, pick out tunes to create a playlist of independent music from around the world. On occasion, though, a guest joins me with some excellent tunes to play, and we chat about music, being creative, and life, etc. Joining me this episode, friends, I'm so excited about, we have Chicago-based singer, guitarist, songwriter Ian Lee. Ian's band Human Errors recently released an album called Super Hits, which I'm a huge fan of. It's direct, unpretentious, and it's full of memorable song after memorable song. Check out the Human Errors bio. Human Errors always show up on time and leave at a reasonable hour. Their favorite pizza topping is cheese, but they like others. Ian Lee, welcome to Song Surfing.
Hey, John, thank you for having me.
And Ian, this is the first time, we were talking about this before the record, the first time I'm recording in person.
Yeah, this is awesome. How do you feel about it?
You know, it was a little different setting up all the equipment, but it was exciting. There was a buzz to it. Yeah. Definitely better than messing with Zoom or whatever app I'm using for that particular record.
Yeah, it's the worst.
So I love your bio. I think it pretty perfectly represents what the band's all about. Where did that come from?
I think it was just a late night, you know, revising of the Instagram bio. Doesn't really have too much to talk about other than maybe just about what we think of us. Just like, I don't know, we're just here hanging out. We like pizza.
The songs are no frills, maybe working class roots. Just get in, get out, to the point. Just fun, little rock, little punk.
Totally. Yeah, you nailed it. Two of us are in the trades, so I mean, we are working class for sure. And yeah, no frills, you know, nothing fancy.
Now, where does that come from? Are there any bands that influenced you or you try to emulate, you wish you could sound more like?
Like so many, like, you know, Minutemen. There's a lot, that's a loaded question. I mean, there's so many different bands that we try to emulate. But yeah, I mean, definitely nothing like in the top 40s, you know, or bands that, you know, are trying to be big just to be big, you know.
Right. So you say Minutemen, and one of the best concerts, actually two of the best concerts, three of the best concerts I've been to were Mike Watt concerts.
Oh man, he is the best, dude. Actually, my Nick Olson, our drummer, he was just talking about one of those bands he saw at Empty Bottle. No, yeah. Minutemen are great, you know, but we're definitely a fan of the Kinks. We actually used to do these Halloween shows where we'd do like a bunch of Kinks covers, maybe a little bit faster, you know, just more like straightforward. And like that was back when we were a three piece, so we didn't have the Dave Davies guitar licks. But I tried to fill in as much as I can, you know.
The thing I always rely on when I need to fill up sound when I play guitar in a stripped down setting is delay.
Definitely.
Delay and reverb.
Yes.
Is it the same for you?
Yeah, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my MXR delay pedal.
Yeah, there we go. How did you meet the other members of Human Errors?
Well, the bass player, Nick, he's my oldest friend in the band. And we worked together, lived together, and then eventually played together. He was actually just playing as a drummer on a cocktail kit, like a floor tom. I think we had a snare. Yeah, we had a snare and like a cymbal, kind of like the Violent Femmes early stuff. I just had like a handful of songs that I never actually got to play out. And we played these really small things like at a friend's house or at my wife's salon anniversary party, Heretics, Die for Your Belief in Logan Square. I think we did like mostly we're like doing open mics, but yeah, nothing crazy. And then upstairs of the salon lived Nick Olson, our drummer. He was getting out of a band and he told my wife, he also got his hair done at the salon. So he was telling my wife that he's looking for a band to start playing around with. And once we played, once we got together and played together, it was kind of crazy how it all fell into place. Like immediately we were just like railing songs one after another out. Like we wrote like 10 songs in like a month.
And yeah, it's incredible, isn't it, when you find folks who you really click with.
Yeah,
right? You don't even need to talk about much.
Yeah.
It just happens.
Totally. And I was in another band, and I really enjoyed being in that band as well, but there was less just kind of like fun hanging out vibes that I was kind of like looking for. Also, I was kind of looking for a band that I can just kind of purge my songs out, because the other band we were more a collaborative band, and just like just to be able to get rid of these songs that I've been writing, they weren't really for that band. So it was cool to actually play the songs that I was writing and the way I intended them to be played, you know.
So when you found Nick the drummer, he was upstairs from your now wife's salon.
Yes.
Did you hear him drumming upstairs? Like, I'm picturing just like stopping everyone at the salon, turning off the hair dryers, going, listen.
No, he didn't actually have his kid upstairs, because it was an apartment complex. So he had a space actually off the Damon Blue Line, this place called Weirder Park. And it was a
great
fun
name
little spot.
For a rehearsal studio.
Yeah, it was somebody else's apartment, but they let us, it was gigantic, but they let us use the back room for a studio or rehearsal space. Yeah, it was fun. Actually, like a lot of all of that momentum came from us playing in that room. It was just really like a creative space. And, you know, the train was literally like 5 feet away from the window, from the platform too. So like we'd be playing for like people coming or going to work, you know? And getting a lot of feedback. Never like anything terrible, but like, you know, sometimes like, you suck. Or like, I mean, I don't care, but you know, most of it was good though.
That's how you know you're onto something.
Yeah. If we can get somebody to say anything to us, you know.
Now, which of the members has the recording studio?
That would be Kevin. He came in the same way that Nick came in. He was talking to me about wanting to play in bands again, and I've kind of wanted to have a second guitar player. And
did you have to change the songs much to add the second guitar?
Yeah, a little. No, not like the base of the songs. No, but you know, when you put another guitar part into it, it kind of does naturally change the song. But it was pretty organic.
And what recording studio is that? Because that's where you record your stuff now, right?
That's where we record now, yeah. Well, that's where we recorded Super Hits. And yeah, we recorded it at Uphill Recording Services. And that's in Norwood Park. It's a really rad spot. And
what's the name again?
Uphill Recording Services.
All right. So any Chicago area bands, if you want to get your demo recorded, that's a good place to check out.
Yeah, it's above like a auto body shop. It's an unassuming spot to have a studio, but you walk up these stairs and it's just like this glorious room full of, you know, pretty much anything you could ever need for a rock band. You know, it's just got this room full of amps and guitars, and he's got a beautiful control room that he's been building for years, decades. Yeah, it's really fun, and it's like it's professional, you know. The sound, the quality is very professional, but it's also like you're recording at home. You know, it's just a very welcoming room. Take your shoes off and
that's
have
super
some coffee.
Important.
Yeah. Oh yeah, big time.
You don't want to be all in your head when you're spending money to record something.
Yeah, and you never feel rushed. I mean, we don't feel rushed because he's in the band and he's recording us and he loves it, you know. But like, I've been there with him doing other bands, you know, just kind of being hands to help out. But yeah, no, he's never like trying to like push you out. If you want something to do, like if you want something crazy to do, he's gonna try and make it work out for you.
Let's get into the music that you selected, and then in the second half, we're gonna get more into how you got started in music, your songwriting process, all that stuff. The first tune that you selected is by the band The Rubs. It's called Wrong Right Girl, and it's from the album Impossible Dream. And here's what the band provided. Joey Rubbish must be stopped, but it's too late for that. As the architect, that's a great opening for a bio. As the architect of every note on this immaculate new LP, he joins the ranks of other groundbreaking modern home recording luminaries, all able to cover every instrumental note recorded, as well as the vocals and recording. So I love that this song has this punk intensity, but it's with acoustic guitar being the driving rhythm instrument.
Yeah, no, totally. It's power pop, man. It's like it kind of encompasses all genres. That's what I like about power pop so much, actually, is it's got its roots of country, punk, you know, proto metal, even, you know, with like Thin Lizzy.
Yeah.
The Rubs are great too. We played with them at this place called East Room. It's not there anymore. But yeah, no, totally. He's got like this Ramones quality, but also like jumps around like the 60s, you know, the 60s, like Easy Beat, Electric Prunes, you know, into the 70s or like early Elvis Costello, obviously. There's a lot of that in there.
And do you feel that's similar to what, to me, the music doesn't sound like Human Errors, but maybe in the sense that they're drawing from a lot of the same sources? Is that fair to say?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think in our first album, there was a lot of similarities, just kind of that straightforward punk, no frills, like you were saying earlier, but really melodic and pop driven.
So Song Surfers, this will be Wrong Right Girl by The Rubs, and then I'll be back after that with more with Ian Lee.
This baby's gonna take me home, or maybe somewhere we can be alone tonight. I'm leaving with the runaway, I took a trip to the present day. I know that I'm
Hey, 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 we are back. We just listened to The Rubs with Wrong Right Girl, and I'm here with Ian Lee of Human Errors. Hello again, Ian.
Hello again.
All right, let's get into another song. So the second one you chose for the song Surfers to Hear is by the band Ethers. Ethers is Russ Calderwood, Bo Hansen, Mary McCain, and Tim Thomas, former members of Heavy Times, Radar Eyes, Outer Minds, The Runnies, and The Swaves. Mary told me, we're getting back to playing shows in Chicago and recording our second full-length album next month, which is actually about the time that we're recording this interview. So Song Surfers, in the coming months, be on the lookout for that. So Ian, I love the sustained intensity on this song, which comes, I think, from the band staying on one chord for a really long stretch, and it just builds and builds and builds. And the keyboard parts are distorted and I'd say like slithering sounding, and they just kind of burrow in your brain.
I love organs. And it makes any song sound like it could give it like just make it sound really poppy, or it can make it sound spooky, or, you know, and this band, so Mary's playing is awesome, and it kind of does both throughout the whole album. And I picked this song in this album, or this band, just cause it's a super group of bands that I was playing, or I was listening to and seeing, from like 08 to 2012. And it just kind of always brings me back to this like awesome period of my life where I was just doing nothing but going to see bands and living like in DIY spaces and traveling all like from one end of the city to the other just to see, you know, to see local music. And you know, these bands particularly, sometimes same night, sometimes the same show, you know, we're playing, you know, all the Runnies, Outer Minds, Heavy Times, sometimes at my house, they were playing in the basement, and, this band sounds like all of those bands in one, you know.
All right, cool. So let's take a listen to Ethers with the song CBD.
Such thing as permanence, but there's a curse I cannot get away from. I have searched and there's nothing left to become. I look ahead, I look above, nothing I need, nothing I love. I look ahead, I look above, nothing I need, nothing I love. Is it facts or fantasy? A medical emergency sent the siren screaming through the air and down the street, through my window that I open, trying to find some relief. Every time I close my eyes to dream, I'm chased by strangers and machines. Every time I close my eyes to dream, I'm chased by strangers and machines. Is it fact or fantasy? Yeah.
Tell me about living in DIY spaces.
I don't know. There was just like this huge surge of DIY spaces in like Logan Square.
Do you mean literally like...
Oh, so like DIY.
Or just going to a lot.
Well, I was living in them and going to them. But yeah, like DIY shows, like just in your house, doing like $5 donations at the door and dollar beers to keep the...
Like rent party kind
exactly,
of situation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. And just like the bands that we're playing were, you know, I'd pay $20 to see, you know, in a real venue. But I didn't have to. I was going in for $5. Yeah, it was something really kind of special about that. You know, like the idea that music should be free and be available for maybe even somebody that's too young to go to a bar and go see a band that they liked. You know, they can just go see them at this party. And I think that's amazing. And if I get why you can't have it, you know, people got to eat. And the more famous you get, you know, the more people you got to pay. I don't know. But when you can have it, it's something to really, really behold.
It's fun to play those kind of shows.
Oh, man, the energy is incredible.
And having the audience 2 feet from you.
Yeah, usually they're the rowdiest shows. When we were hosting shows in our basement, we were living in a place called the Bloodline in Logan Square, and the ceiling wasn't too high up, so like people were dancing and crowd surfing, and like literally there'd be footprints on the ceiling. I mean, we'd pack that place, and it was small too. So like, yeah, it was just a lot of fun and high energy.
Let's get into your past. How did you get started with music? Tell me about your past, Ian. How did you get started in music?
It's kind of always been around me. My mom has always been into music. You know, she's always had records and CDs around. And
what's one you remember hearing a lot of?
A lot of The Clash, a lot of the Ramones. Kind of grew up with those two bands in particular.
That's not like what you'd think of as being typical mom music.
No. Actually, the typical parent music that, you know, like the Beatles or the Stones, I didn't actually end up getting into until I was a teenager and like founding it my own way. But yeah, my mom was, you know, she was in the punk scene when she was a teenager and she had me young. So I kind of grew up with that. And then, you know, we listened to the music with the times, you know, like Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know, all Offspring, Nirvana, you know, bands like that we grew up with.
I really liked those first. I remember listening to those first two, I think, Offspring albums a ton.
Oh, yeah. Green Day, too. Like, yeah. The first two records are really fun and good. I don't mind I think Warning, it was the last record that I actually enjoyed, but I wouldn't say I hate the rest of it, but it's just kind of lost interest in it, you know? But yeah, no, I've always been around music, playing music, aside from picking up saxophone in the third grade. I didn't get started in playing, like, guitar until I was, eighth grade. I like found my mom's old PV guitar in her closet, and she's like, "All right, I'll show you a song and tell me what you think. If you want to keep playing, we'll buy you a guitar." And I really liked it, and it was a Ramones song, and then like a Metallica song, or like part of a Metallica song. Yeah, I just kind of kept going with it, and I tried my hardest to figure out how the hell you put your fingers on those frets without, or how you slide with your slide your fingers without getting burned, and eventually got calloused up and moved to bass, which you should know because you were my bass teacher in high school.
Yeah, that's how Ian and I originally met. I was a student teaching at the time at the high school that Ian was going to, and then afterward you wound up doing guitar lessons or bass lessons for a little time, like private lessons.
Bass lessons, because I wanted to be in the jazz band.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
All right.
And Chuck, did he pay you? I don't know who paid you to be my bass teacher. I hope you got paid.
If it was at the school, that was just my internship.
Okay.
Right. But I thought that I remember working with you at the music studio in the area too that I worked at.
Yeah, you had, this was after we'd been taking lessons together, and you had asked me if I wanted to sub in, just play bass for like a school of rock thing that you had curated or made. It was something that you were doing.
Yeah, the student rock bands.
Yeah, and that was fun. That was a lot of fun. I really liked that. You know, teaching kids how to play music and just not just like teaching them how to play like scales or something, but like giving them the freedom to like learn their songs that they like to listen to and like play them in a band and like have everybody sync up like that. It's awesome. I remember the first time I got to do that. It was so fun. It just made sense, you know, and it's hard to do that. It's hard to make sense before you know how to play your instrument, like how to make other instruments to come together.
Yeah. And just to realize that it's possible,
yeah,
is a huge thing.
Yeah.
Like, when did you first realize that you could write your own music?
It was kind of like after high school. There's this documentary. I don't know if you know the band Brian Jonestown Massacre.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was this documentary that I watched called Dig. And I'm sure anybody who knows that band knows the documentary. It kind of got big from that. Or they got more recognition from that. But I was like, man, these songs are so killer. And like, they're not that hard. They're not that complicated. You know, just a couple chords and reverbed out vocals. I think I could do it. And I ended up going in the garage and started banging out some chords that I liked. And then I wrote some lyrics down and I was like, okay, that's not that bad. And I didn't like my voice at all, but I was like, if I'm going to do it, I have to like be able to like my voice or like deal with my voice. So, you know, I just tried to sing as loud as I can. And then after the years went by, I calibrated a little bit. Yeah, just kind of rolled with it.
Do you remember any of your early songs?
No, and I really hope no one else does either, because they were so bad.
I was talking with my friend Ryan. The listeners know him as Clock. He's one of the correspondents on the show. But we were both in our first band was together. We were in, how do I say that? Our first band was the same band.
Right.
We were in our first band together. It took a long time to get there. And we were talking the other day about the first show that we played, and he has a video of it. And I said, have you watched? And he goes, oh God, no. Like, we're both too embarrassed by it. Cause you know, it's bad. I mean,
how old are you?
We were older, 18, I think. We both got started playing a little older. Like, I didn't start playing guitar until I was 15, almost 16.
Mm-hmm.
And then didn't start playing in bands or anything like that until like senior in high school. Like around that time. So it was that summer after high school that we played our first show. It's a hard age to have your first show because we knew that we sucked. You know, like we were old enough to realize that it didn't sound good.
Yeah.
But, you know, you still do it, right? You still have that drive to do it, and that's how you get better. But, man, I have no interest in ever going back and hearing that again.
Well, I think it's funny because when you're a teenager and you're in a band, because I was in bands in high school. I never like wrote any songs. I was just like a bass player, a rhythm guitar player. But we thought we were the shit, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of funny that like, because you like we were saying, like you don't think it's possible to do it until you're doing it, and you're like, and the fact that you can do it, there's like, it's like, you know, discovering a new element. And like no one else is doing this. We're the only ones doing this.
Trailblazers.
Exactly. Oh man. And it's funny now to like be so much better. Well, I don't know about better, but you know, more like synced in than you were. I guess caring more about like how you sound. And then looking back at that and like, wow.
What I found with playing now and recording now is it can be a challenge to not have things sound too good. I guess, you know, to like keep that rawness to it.
Definitely.
Keep that like that initial impulse.
Right.
Right. You know,
yeah,
especially
you
with recording at home when you can just do the same thing 40 times if you really want to. Right. And those early days, I mean, that rawness is there.
Totally.
Whether you want it to be or not.
Yeah, and you do want that, especially when you're much older and you like have your sound down. You don't want it to be too polished, you know. No one wants that.
Let's talk about your songwriting process. Do you write all the songs in Human Errors? Do you write them together as a band?
Up until this last record, yes. I wrote the songs, and then I bring it to the band and kind of give them a guide to where I want the song to sound, and it's usually pretty close to where I want, but I don't like nitpick or anything.
What kind of things do you say to guide them?
Well, I'll usually like just like give Nick Fisher, the bass player, like my idea of the bass line, and he'll be like, okay, well, I like that, but I'm probably gonna do it this way, and I'll be like, okay, cool, whatever. With the drums, man, it's terrible. I'm the stereotypical.
You can do this.
Yeah, tuku, tuku, tuku. But right here, like, he loves it. but I don't really have to tell them much, you know. Like they're really good at their instruments, and we're also like really close, you know, as friends. So we kind of like know what we're talking about without talking about it, you know. And you know, Kevin too, he's really talented, and he's been in bands for his whole life too. And yeah,
so it doesn't take a lot to put the songs together.
Not really, man. Yeah, like. Well, yeah, if I write the song, it takes like maybe a less than one practice to actually like iron it out, and we have like
a really finished product.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of times the full concept and sound of the song in your head, or do you also bring in like pretty unfinished things and see what the band does with it?
When I write a song, it's just on an acoustic guitar, and I'll. So it's pretty raw. I don't have anything, I have ideas in my head of like, oh yeah, maybe like a harmony right here, or I'll be like, I'll write out a solo part for this later. We'll get back to that. I'll jump back in on that. But
you're not recording like a demo in GarageBand that's got all the parts and everything.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No. And that what I was saying earlier, up until now, it was only me. Kevin, you know, he's also a songwriter. We were able to get one of his songs that he had from a previous band onto this record.
Which one?
Been So Long.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, yeah. I do too, actually. Yeah, it's one of my favorite songs on the record. And yeah, that's him. That's his song, and he's singing it.
Well, I thought that Ian sounded a little different on that song, so that totally...
It's funny though. It's kind of funny. We do have a similar voice on the record. I don't know if that is just editing or if that was him kind of calibrating his voice to sound like mine. But in the harmonies, because he does a lot of the harmonies on there too.
Maybe it's just that you've hung out so much that you're starting to talk and sound the same.
Maybe.
I mean, people do that, right? Like you pick up on your friend's mannerisms. That's why people talk with regional accents.
For sure. Yeah.
Is it too much to think that a band might?
No, not at all.
Absorb each other?
Absorb.
Like amoebas?
No, you know, it's all the same. You know, it's like anything else. If you do it enough, it's going to end up being, you're going to meld together.
So a lot of times when I write a song, especially if it's with a guitar or piano, I usually don't have the lyrics to start with. Sometimes I do, and that's like, you know, a gift when that happens. But often it's more melody ideas and sort of like an idea of what I think the song should be, like tempo-wise, energy-wise, that kind of thing. And then I'll strum chords, mumble sing until some stuff kind of flows and sticks, and then I'll write words around that. What kind of stuff do you do?
I guess I'll just kind of fiddle around with chords until I like a series of chords, and then I'll either write lyrics for it, or I'll pick apart some old lyrics that I had written and never used and see if anything fits. I don't know. It's not really like this magical process. I just kind of like see what fits, and if I like it, if it's got that like pop sound, that, then I'll stick with it, or I'll roll with it. But I really
it often starts with a chord progression, though.
Yeah, almost always. Yeah, I'm never like humming lyrics in my head and then like, oh, okay, I got to find out the chords for it. It's usually like me just sitting on my couch playing guitar and I'm like, oh yeah, I like that. That's cool.
Well, how does a chord progression work or not work for you?
It all comes from pop music, you know? It's just that basic, not basic, just like the standard, you know, like C, D, G, C, D, G, and then...
Is that good or bad, if it's standard or...
I like it. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? Like, I think that applies. One thing I do always try to do is throw a minor in there in every song.
Yeah.
It always needs a minor.
Minor
at
four.
At a bridge or, you know, like in the chorus. Yeah, always needs a minor. I don't really know what makes a good chord progression, but you hear it. You know it when you hear it.
Something that's got a little zing to it or...
Or maybe something a little unexpected, but, you know, it kind of, it all comes back to the bulk sound, the bulk chord progression.
I've been finding myself writing a lot of songs using the one and the four chord, you know, and it's now on my latest songs that I'm working on, I'm trying to consciously avoid that because I think it's, although I've been doing different stuff with the melody, it's kind of makes them sound a little too samey if I were to put them all together on the same EP.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I always kind of admired that in bands, you know, like a band, like when a band has a thing, even if it's like just a chord, like the Kinks, they've got their chord progression that, you know, they've done.
That you really got me.
Yeah, exactly. And that they've done and changed and made this, you know, like revisited through their whole career as a band. Like even in their like late 70s stuff, they've still like will find a way to slip that chord progression in there in a song. But I don't know. I always seem to like that, and I don't know if we have that like a thing, you know.
Maybe it's for the fans to decide.
Yeah. I don't have time to dig into my.
When you're coming up with your lyrics, is there any certain type of thing that inspires you?
Love, big one. Death. It's another big one. Nature.
Heavy topics.
Yeah.
We're not just writing songs about drinking beer.
No. I've tried that, and I just didn't take myself seriously. Like, I didn't take it, like, I wasn't feeling it, you know? I can, you know, but I don't like to, make jokes about my songs, you know, like at least for this band, you know, if I was in like a beer drinking punk band, that like just wanted to play loud and party and stuff, like, hell yeah, let's do it. But, for this band, yeah, I don't know. I like to put thought into not only like what I'm not what I'm saying, but like how it's being said. But yeah, no, I mean, I just kind of just think about just like anything other than like my life, like, or like topics that like, that are really like involved in my life, you know?
You write about topics that are important to your life?
No, I try to avoid that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's kind of like an escape. I try not to talk about too much about my life. This is actually this record is the most that I've talked about. Like, childhood home is actually about my childhood home, but I don't have any other songs behind that I've done that.
Is Harold's number 13? Okay. Is that referring to Harold's chicken?
Yeah, that came up because I wrote the song, and that was actually about gun violence.
Right.
And, we decided to throw another bar in there at the end. I don't know if you caught that, but so it's like not 12 bar blues, it's a 13 bar.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, right. And Nick Fisher is like, hey, it's like Harold's 13, like number 13. And we were like, oh, that's the name of the song. No real, it has no meaning to like what the song is about, but.
Well, you know what, it gets you thinking though. You know, I was wondering about it enough to want to ask you about it.
Good. Yeah, no, at least we're talking about it.
Who are your favorite songwriters?
You know, your standard Dylan, a lot of folk, you know. Actually, I've been really digging Michael Hurley. I don't know if you're familiar.
I don't know Michael Hurley.
Yeah, he's one of the, like, considered, like, the outsider folk artist.
What era?
60s. But he's been doing stuff throughout his whole life. When I started writing songs, I was listening to a lot of Dylan.
For the lyrics, what was the appeal there?
Yeah, just the way he can, like, roll, like, just rap a bunch of words on one chord.
And, it's endless.
Yeah, yeah.
You can, how many times you can rhyme and...
I know, yeah, it's wild.
It's incredible. Some bands I like for the sound, you know, like a Led Zeppelin, but I can't get at all into what their songs are about. But I really enjoy, like, the music, and Robert Plant's vocals are great. I just completely tune out the words.
Sure.
So when you listen to music, what do you gravitate toward most? Is it lyrics? Is it the music? Or, you know, because we're talking about...
It's definitely not the lyrics. I'm definitely more involved in, like, the sonically, how it sounds, you know. Yeah, no, like, I'm listening to just, like, any irregularities. What's the word? Irregularities. Woo! Yeah, irregularities. I'm listening to that. And, you know, what makes the song stand out? If it's just, like, pulling off, like, a little seventh on one bar, you know, and that they don't do it for the rest of the song. Like, it's just kind of just there. It's like a little Easter egg, you know. That's what I look for mostly, is like something to stand out. Yeah.
What's a lesson you've learned along the way? You've played in a lot of bands, right? And you've been doing this for quite some time now. So something you've learned.
Something I've learned. I've learned to, especially playing live, never stop playing. You know, if you mess up, you can't stop.
Oh, you mean like during the song?
During a show. You just have to learn how to have fun and not let that stop you. Because when I started playing in front of people, I was like, a nervous wreck, like I'm sure anybody else was when they first started playing. Oh, yeah. And if I stopped, or if I fucked up, then I couldn't play the rest of the song. Like, I would be completely lost, and it would just ruin the entire mood of that. Maybe not the set, but that song is definitely thrown out. That's what I learned, is how to just let it roll off and keep going and never stop.
Yeah, keeping your cool, right?
Yes.
Keeping your composure during, you know, not panicking is hard.
Yeah.
How did you just come from experience, or how did you get around that?
Yeah, I think I just might have fucked up enough times to
not care much anymore, or just to have it maybe not be unique, right? It doesn't seem as big if it's happened.
All right. Yeah.
Multiple times.
Yeah. A lot of it too is, like, in the beginning, we weren't really playing for that many people, and I was like, okay, well, it's not really a big deal if I'm messing up in front of these eight people that are sitting at the bar.
And they probably didn't even notice.
They don't even notice, and, you know, they always tell you at the end of the show, like, hey, your set was great.
Yeah, unless you stop the song.
Exactly.
And tell, like, them, oh, whoops.
Except for that one part where you completely ruined the vibe.
I saw, do you know the band Mudhoney?
Yeah.
So I saw them a long time ago, and they played one of their songs off their first album, and I think they hadn't played it in a while, and there's a kind of a signature thing that the drummer does to kick in when the rest of the band comes in, and he was missing it. He forgot what it was, and so they restarted the song like five or six times. They handled it well because they didn't panic at all. They were laughing about it, and it was fun for the audience. You know, this total... mistake just became part of the show.
Yeah, and that's cool too. Yeah, if you can make it fun for everybody, like when you mess up, then I think you're doing your job. Yeah, But if you're gonna like throw a tantrum or like completely like shell up because of a mistake, then I don't know if it's a good thing that to be playing in front of a live audience, because that's not what they're paying to see.
Yeah. Can you share any tips? We've got a number of people in the audience that are aspiring musicians or in bands. Any tips for writing music, being more creative, playing in a band?
Yeah, no, I'd say don't be too hard on yourself, especially with songwriting. Like if you can't write a song in 5 minutes, it's not, that never happens, you know? Write as much as you can down, even if you don't even think you want to use it, save it.
Do you do voice memos?
I do voice memos, yeah. But I just have like a lot of notes and just parts of songs that I will eventually, like, if I'm stumped on a song that I like have like 90% complete and I need like one extra line, I'll just dig through my notes and be like, oh, that that kind of fits. It's all a puzzle for me. So, I mean, I don't know if this helps anybody else, but for me, this is how I work.
It's surprising how many times that works.
It does help. It gets me out a lot of jams. Yeah, so I'd say, yeah, write as much as you can, even if you don't want to use it.
All right. How about your song? So we're going to play Been So Long by Human Errors. So wait, who was singing this one?
Kevin. That's Kevin.
All right. So you can tell Kevin. I love the vocals. There's a grittiness to his voice that's wonderful. And I love the looseness of the backing vocals too. And I don't mean loose as like a negative, right? But it sounds off the cuff, you know. It's that, I guess, that rawness that we were talking about earlier. There's a fun loose energy to it.
He's gonna love that.
Yeah, well,
because
I love listening to it. The way it's performed has the effect of sounding like we're getting to listen in on some friends having fun jamming on a song. In the best possible way.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were going for. What he was going for. He made sure that we knew, like, this is like a Exile on Main Street, you know, in the basement kind of recording. Oh, yeah. Like, he wants it to sound like that kind of Stones, Heroin era.
Now that you say that, yes, perfectly. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, I hear that.
Yep.
I didn't make the connection before.
Yep. No. So I guess we nailed it.
Yeah. All right. So anything else you want to say about that, or should we just play it for the Song Surfers?
No, I'd say let it speak for itself.
Anything you want to plug, or where can people find your music and follow you?
Yeah. So we're streaming on all the medias, I think except for Amazon. You can find us on Instagram, on the Don't Panic Records and Distro Bandcamp. That's who put out Super Hits. They're great friends of ours and super rad distro and record label.
Yeah, they got some other cool bands too that they're distributing.
Yeah. And they keep growing. I mean, they're not even taking any bands right now, I don't think, because they're just swamped. Wow. Which is great, you know. They're very busy. No, we don't have any shows right now because our bass player has been out of town. He's been going back and forth, LA to Chicago, so it's kind of been hard, but he is coming back and we're going to start booking for the summer.
Okay, awesome. Keep a lookout. Well, looking forward to catching one of those shows before the recording. And Song Surfers, know I've talked about this before because it happens frequently, but I missed your performance at, Empty Bottle recently. It was kind of a big show for you, right? And I missed it because of a freaking migraine.
Yeah. Well, it was loud, so you probably wouldn't have enjoyed it.
not in the condition I was in now, but I'm going to catch you one of these days.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Ian Lee, thanks so much for being here. You did great.
All right. Thanks for having me, John.
All right. Take care.
All right.
All right, Song Surfers, here is Human Errors with Been So Long. And then, special treat, when we come back, Ian has his guitar. He's going to play a song live in the Song Surfing studio. We'll be right back.
the cemetery. Lost, but I'm still free. Cause I don't have bills, just time to kill. Count tombstones in three. I'm sitting in a cemetery.
Thanks for listening to Song Surfing, and thanks to Ian Lee and all of the artists and bands who were part of this episode. You can find the links to all of the music on the show notes page of songsurfingpodcast.com. And friends, if you haven't listened to Human Error's Super Hits album yet, you have to listen to it. It's so good. It's going to be on my end of year top 10 list for sure. I love it. You can follow Song Surfing on Facebook and Instagram by searching Song Surfing Podcast, all one word. Follow on Twitter, Song Surfing Pod. You can follow me on Instagram, just search Oodles Music. If you want to help me improve the show, then please rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, the Podcast Addict app, or Spotify. If you're not sure what to say, suggesting an episode that people check out first is a great thing. Tell them what your favorite is. Or you can tell them a favorite artist that you've heard on the show or who one of your favorite guests has been. The opening theme of the show is Living in a Fishbowl by Josh Ween, and the outro music is Little Pills by Patrick Moonbird. Oh, my cat is jumping on me. Hi, Dinah. So, I should say my name's John Kell, and
see you next time.